box.
Okay. All right. This is a continuation of a hearing, which was originally scheduled for, back in September, but because of improper notice, it was continued and it was properly noticed again. And the notice for this meeting was that the Kona Planning Board Plan Review Committee will hold a hearing at the Kona Town offices on October 4 at 8 o'clock. That's upon a request for special permits under sections 3 and 13 of the Kona zoning bylaws from Maria A. Kittrist and James J. DeCoulis, co-trustees of Gorda Realty Trust, assessor map 12, parcel 38, set off lot 232. To construct a three-bedroom house, driveway, septic system, underground utilities, wetland replication area, and well, and to construct a road, bridge, and underground utilities in an easement on a lot owned by Jane B. and Mark J. Miller, map 12, parcel 41, set off lot 708. There was a bushwhacking site visit this afternoon at 5:45. What I'd like to do tonight is to have Jim start by making a presentation of the scope of the project. And what I'd like to do is just have the board address this with what I would call clarifying questions. Let's not jump into concerns or deliberation of points. Let's go through the whole presentation, get it out there. There are some letters that need to be entered into the record, and I want to get those into the record as quickly as possible so that those can be addressed. And then we can go back and have individual committee members ask, raise their questions, concerns, or whatever, and go through the thing. I'd like Jim to start to walk us through this, but I would ask if first we could talk about the conservation and DEP order of conditions. I want to say that, as some of you may know, there's been a long history on this lot and applications here. There are a lot of people who are very concerned because it's a very wet lot and there are a lot of wetlands on it. But I just want to remind everybody up front that our concern as Planning Board Plan Review Committee is basically limited to those things that are in, you know, the zoning and the things we normally deal with. The Conservation Commission of the town had denied this project, I think, at least once, maybe more. I don't really want to go through the whole history there. But it was lost on appeal in the court system, and an order of conditions, as I understand it, was issued by the DEP. And just so we can sort of get that all out on the table up front, Jim, if you could start with the order of conditions from the DEP and talk to us about what that is. And I don't know if that's something we could get a copy of or not. We do have some overlapping jurisdiction with our own Conservation Commission in terms of clearing the vegetation. But, you know, they do stuff in 20 feet of wetland, but we do it. And I don't know if there's any conflict between what the DEP conditions say and what we might want to say. We also usually make our permits conditioned on whatever is said by the Conservation Commission. So.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, why
don't you introduce yourself?
Sure, certainly. I'm Peter Feuerbach. I'm an attorney at Rubin and Redman in Boston, and I represent the trust and the trustees, Mr. DeCoulis and Ms. Kittrist. Thank you for the site view today for the members who were able to get out and view the property. Taking your lead, Mr. Chairman, on the wetland issues, and also talk about the Board of Health issues and a little bit about some of the other permitting, because I have not been involved in this particular matter as long as town and the trust and others, but I think it goes back over 10 years, particularly on the wetlands. And I think, as you alluded to, in Massachusetts, we have the State Wetlands Protection Act, and excuse me for all of you who know this by heart, but there's the State Wetlands Protection Act that applies in all the cities and towns in the Commonwealth. Some cities and towns have adopted their own local wetlands bylaws and wetland ordinances. Not all the cities and towns have done it, but many have, and McKinnon has done that. So in this town, if someone needs a wetlands permit, they need one on the state level, and they need one on the local level. So on the state level, we received superseding order of conditions. That's the term of our, that's the state permit, and that was in July 12, 2001. Okay. That was further appealed, and it went through an adjudicatory process. And in November of 2005, November 10, 2005, the DEP, through the administrative law judge, issued the final order of conditions. That's the final order. And then in 2009, February 5, 2009, DEP extended that final order of conditions to this year, to November 10, 2011. We've made the request to further extend that for an additional 3 years. And the additional extension is authorized in DEP's wetland regulations. I don't know if they have the site right off hand. 310 CMR 10.058, I believe, is the one about extending an order of conditions. When someone is not able to commence the work, wanted to commence the work, but they're unable to because of appeals and other litigation, DEP is allowed to give an extension. So we've made that request, and that would... because we have had appeals and litigation for this particular project, so we haven't been able to start the work. So that covers the permit on the state level. Now, as you mentioned, Mr. Chairman, the commission had denied this project once, maybe more than once, maybe several times, and the trust appealed that decision to Superior Court, Massachusetts Superior Court, and then in March of last year, March 1 of 2010, the Superior Court, I don't have a copy of this, but here it is. It's the memorandum of decision, an order on the plaintiff's motion for judgment on the pleadings. This was a decision issued by Judge Kimberly Budd. And, Mr. Chairman, the conclusion is 5 lines long.
Sure,
if you don't mind, I'll read it. Here's the conclusion. In sum, the court holds that the commission did not base its decision on bylaw provisions that are more stringent than the Act, the Wetlands Protection Act, and DEP regulations. The commission's disagreement with DEP's conclusion regarding GORDAS, that's the trust, wetland delineation, and the project's compliance with DEP performance standards and regulations is not an adequate basis for denying the application. In addition, the commission failed to adopt any uniform performance standards or design specifications to evaluate the project. GORDAS project is therefore governed by the DEP superseding order of conditions. Accordingly, the court vacates the commission's decision. Okay, that's the conclusion. And then the order, which is this part right here, says, for the foregoing reasons, it is hereby ordered that the plaintiff's motion for judgment on the pleadings on count one of their amended complaint be allowed. The Town of Kenna Conservation Commission's decision denying the plaintiff's application is hereby vacated. The plaintiff's project shall be governed by the Department of Environmental Protection superseding order of conditions.
Okay.
So that was in March 1 of last year.
Okay. Can I just a question? I'd like to, I assume you're allows to waive the reading of your letter, just like to officially enter into the record the letter from Mr. Feuerbach of September 30, 2011, which everybody in the board should have received copies of. In it, you state that you have, in page 2, you have obtained final order conditions under the town's wetland bylaw.
Mm-hmm.
So I just, that doesn't seem to be, you just implied that the town's bylaw was vacated and not applicable.
The decision was.
Decision, right. So how have you obtained, under the town's wetland bylaw, a final order of conditions?
By virtue of the court's decision.
Saying that that is the.
Which the, there's no appeal of this. My understanding is the town initiated an appeal but did not pursue it. So this decision is final. And hence we have a final order of conditions under the bylaw.
All right. What's your understanding, or sir, what's your understanding of who then, who, what is the town conservation commission standing in regards to the project at this point?
Could I just ask a question? Sure. And the committee knows that we denied this, and that then we chose at a certain point not to appeal the finding, the final decision of the judge. My only question would be the implication in the letter that we the town, separate from DEP, authorized their own order of conditions, and I just want to make it clear that we have never authorized nor written up an order of conditions under. For us, I understand that we were vacated, and that the DEP then therefore supersedes. But my question would be, can we get a copy? Because I don't have one without going back into 10 years of history. I don't have a copy of DEP's order of conditions, so we have nothing as a town really to look at.
We can get that to you, that's a fair comment. I didn't mean to imply that the commission voted unanimously to approve the project.
It says that we issued an order of conditions, but DEP did the supersedition.
Yeah, I'm just looking at where I said we obtained a final order of conditions. I do think we obtained a final order of conditions, but it wasn't through the approval, right, like you mentioned. So, yeah, I didn't mean
all
to.
Right. So you can send us a copy.
Yeah.
Please continue.
Okay. So that's the wetland proceeding. So everything that's shown on this plan, mm-hmm, and Jim, as the project engineer, will describe it in more detail. But everything that's shown on this plan has been approved, and we have valid current permits under the state act and the local bylaw.
Okay.
Now we turn to the septic sewage disposal issues shown on the plan, and we saw in the site view that with the house here and the chamber and the tank here and the line out to the leaching area. Those components for this proposed three-bedroom home have been approved by your local board of health.
Mm-hmm.
We had prior approvals. That approval was reaffirmed by the board of health. And then most recently, in August of this year, on August 17, the Board of Health approved a modification that the trust had proposed to be sensitive to an archaeological feature that had been reported out here during the field survey. And we presented this issue to the Board of Health, and thankfully the Board of Health said, the Board of Health will approve the relocation of the primary and reserve leaching area. So the septic system components have been approved by the Board of Health.
Does anybody have any questions about conservation issues or the septic issues?
So those are two particular permitting issues. This had in the past been reviewed on the state level. Most recently, Mass Historical Commission has reviewed this, and we attached a copy of MHC's letter as part of the package, where the MHC indicated that the plan was in compliance with MHC's requirements. We come before the board now in the committee under a couple of the sections of the zoning bylaw. Section 3.9 regarding the siting, Section 13 regarding the Akinna DCPC. In that article, Section 13, the site plan review provision, the clearing vegetation provision, the historical and archaeological resource, order of conditions provision. In the letter that we submitted dated September 30, to which you referred, Mr. Chairman, we tried to lay out how our plan, how the trust plan complies with the various site review criteria in Article 13. And it's a laborious letter, or laborious to put together, it's probably worse to read. We took the criteria seriously, and we considered them, and as we tried to enumerate here, we believe we've complied with them. We're happy to talk about any particular one. If the committee believes that we're not in compliance or has a question about our compliance, we're here to talk about that. And I think with that as a an introduction, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to have Mr. DeCoulis, the professional engineer who prepared the plan, stand to discuss some of the features. We discussed them out in the field, and for those who were not out in the field, we could learn a little bit more about it. After you review some of the correspondence, we'll have a chance to comment on that as well.
Do you recall, did we get a copy of your application to Mass Historic? Must be in the old file. That's probably where it is. It's not in this. I do have Broner's letter of July 11, 2000, but I don't know that we have our copy of the application. My question would be, did they do or look at all the areas to be disturbed?
Yes.
In the entire lot?
Yes.
Okay.
Including the easement area.
Including this area.
Okay.
As well. Yeah.
All right. It's all right. You can continue. What I think we should do is see if we have an earlier, the coolest file that goes back 10 years or so. It probably is in because I'm never getting a letter.
Yeah. In fact, Mr. Chairman, if I may, the filing that the Coulson Company made on behalf of the trust Friday, July 22 of this year, the special permit application.
Mm-hmm.
One of the
is the letter
is
right.
The letter from PAL, March 31, 2001. It's the letter to MHC with the application for the permit to conduct the intensive
yes.
locational survey, and attached to that was the plan showing. The easement area as well as the lot
okay.
where PAL is going to do the survey.
All right. Thank you. Jim?
Great. Thank you. You can go over a little further once you see it. You know, we talked, Mr. Chairman, you talked a little bit about the wetlands issues, and, everyone seems to have this notion that this is a really wet lot, and there's a lot of wetlands, but when this town, the common lands in this town, was set off in 1878, there were about 20 lots that or more that were so wet that they had valuable peat that was available for the tribal members, and the reason why it was so valuable because, as many of you know, this town was stripped in the 19th century and before. And the peat rights, which are referred to as profits apprende, accompanied the deeds to these really wet lots. As it turns out, this set off lot 232 was not one of those really wet lots that had valuable peat on it. So I just want to put it in a little context here as to just how accessible the wetlands are. Most of the wetlands associated with this project are within the easement area on the Norris property here. As a matter of fact, more than 80% of the wetland activity is within the easement area. Once you get on set off lot 232 itself, the wetland impacts are relatively minor. And just to get back into the real debate, the beginning and genesis of this project, it began in 1998. We had originally proposed a house and septic system in this easterly area here to reduce additional wetland impacts. We went before the Zoning Board of Appeals and sought relief from the setback requirement to the property line for the house to reduce wetland tracks. The ZBA denied that. We went into the land court. One of the outcomes of the land court decision before Judge Mark Green, in which the town appeared, Ron Rappaport was representing the town, Jerry Wiener appeared, Dick Barbini, and one of the recommendations that came out of that hearing, that trial, as well as the decision, was that the house should go in the middle of the lot, and that there was room to achieve that, complying with zoning setback requirements, and that if the trust needed to, it could build a bridge in the easement area. This was recommended by Dick Barbini, the town's engineer, and also Judge Green cited and recommended that a bridge was a possible option for the trust to minimize wetland impacts within the easement area, because they recognized that that's where most of the wetland impacts were. We then filed a notice of intent to the Conservation Commission. They failed to act. We went to DEP, sought a superseding order of conditions, were brought into the NEPA review process. For those of you who don't know, it's a state review process. Large projects, no single-family house lot in this town has ever gone under a NEPA review. We went through that. We filed an environmental notification form in 2000. As part of that NEPA review process, we were also asked to look at endangered species in the easement area. Particularly, there was sphagnum moss in this area here, where there was a potential for a rare endangered orchid called Arethusa bulbosa to grow. And through that review process, we decided that to get out of the NEPA review, we would simply build a bridge, span the wetlands, reduce any potential impacts of sphagnum moss and Arethusa in that area. And once we did that, DEP said, okay, that's fine, that's a great idea. We'll go ahead and issue the superseding order of conditions, and that's what was issued in July of 2001. That's sort of like the foundation of where we ended up. I mean, it took 5 years to get an administrative appeal resolved. Both the town and the Fruchtmans appealed that superseding order of conditions to the Division of Administrative Law Appeals. The town dropped out. So it was just the Fruchtmans who stayed in and fought that wetland appeal. As Peter had mentioned, that we prevailed and the superseding order of conditions was affirmed by the Commissioner of the Department of Environmental Protection in 2005. As to the project itself, as after 13 years of permitting, what we end up with is a driveway of 900 feet that starts down at that intersection. Well, the project itself begins down at the southeasterly corner of the Miller lot, which is set off lot 708 here. There's a pre-existing road that Peter Ross decided to bypass in 1998. I was at a Conservation Commission meeting where he wanted to go outside of the easement and get out of Jeff Madison's easement. And to do that, he built this little bypass here allege that he would reduce. He was having a hard time. He alleged that he was having a hard time getting through this area, and that's why the bypass was necessary. So that's how that bypass came to be. Our project actually starts down here reconstructing and regrading this pre-existing drive that Peter had. And then it begins at this point here, the new construction, which, like I said, 900 feet from this point through the easement area, now owned by the Millers. It's all on lot 708 here. Then it comes in to set off lot 232. Goes through an intermittent stream crossing right here with an 18-inch corrugated polyethylene pipe, comes along the property line and goes to the house site. At the house site, the house itself is 26 by 36, it's a one-and-a-half-story cape that we're proposing. From there, wastewater is discharged to a septic tank by gravity. From the septic tank goes into a pump chamber. Pump chamber pumps to a 2-inch force main line to the northwesterly area of the lot, which has been perked and, as Peter mentioned, approved by the Board of Health. one of the issues that we had to deal with because of there's still 26, there's about 2,400 square feet of wetlands that's being filled. Actually, I think it's about 2,350 or something, even with the bridge. What we had to do was replicate the lost wetland resource areas, and what we have is a wetland replication area up in here, which we did not visit today, but it's in a watershed divide. The object here is to replicate the lost wetlands down in the easement area, and at this intermittent stream crossing, create wetland resource area up in this area of 2,600 square feet. This wetland resource area joins this larger area, this larger BBW here in the easterly portion of the site, and allows for no net loss of wetlands to be achieved in this project. My experience in the town has involved a wetland replication area in two locations. One is at Black Fork Road, where we actually replicated 4,500 square feet of wetlands, and at the town landfill, where we replicated and created a stormwater detention basin. So I've got some experience in this town, and both projects have succeeded in creating valuable resource areas. So that project, this particular replication area here, will involve cutting trees, grading, and excavating down to create the hydrology necessary to bring in lost wetland vegetation, which we're going to take from this area here and transplant it over into this new replication area here. That's it in summary.
Okay, can you talk about the bridge and what, since that's more in our purview, what's involved in this bridge? What is this bridge?
This is a 50-foot steel and wood combination bridge. It's a 50-foot span from this southwesterly abutment at this junction here to the northeasterly junction up here. There's two concrete abutments. In the superseding order conditions, which I'll email to you, there are detailed site plans that show not only the bridge in plan view, but in cross section with details of the joints and bolt patterns and all of the details necessary to construct the bridge. What it is basically is four steel I-beams set on concrete abutments at each end. There'll be a small grove crane that will set from this location here that will set the four steel I-beams in place, and then cross steel members will join the I-beams. Once that's accomplished, then wood decking will be laid on top. This is a very type of it's a very common bridge that you'll see in northern New England. There's a bridge not that much different than this on your way down to Menepsha on the left-hand side. You're going down into the village of Menepsha. There's about a 20-foot little bridge that's very similar to this. Leading up to the first abutment, there'll be field stone retaining walls on both sides to minimize the wetland disturbance in this area. Similarly, on the northeasterly portion, beyond the second abutment, there'll be field stone retaining walls on both sides to limit the amount of disturbance to the wetland fill area.
All right. Anybody have any clarifying questions about the house, the bridge? Just small questions? Okay. And it's good. I think your letter, Jim, probably helped a lot of people get through some of the basics. If you don't have anything else, then I'd like to read a couple of letters into the record from abutters. Do you have the second one?
Chairman, we received a copy of the Miller letters, or an additional copy of the Fruchtman letter that we can.
Sure.
And if not, we'll just follow along and read it.
Yeah. Okay. We'll have a copy made for you. So this is September 23, the example of Planning Board Plan Review Committee. We respectfully urge the Planning Board Plan Review Committee to deny the above-captioned application for special permits filed by Maria Kittris and James DeCoulis on behalf of Gorda Realty Trust. As owners of lots 144, 143 to the north, and 144 northeast, which I will say is a typo. He refers to the same lot twice, but we are certain that the planned access involving a bridge over lot 708 will have a deleterious impact on all water runoff on lot 708 and those to the south, such as ours, and cause other severe environmental problems. The trust special permits would clearly violate the equivalent bylaw regulations and should be denied. Moreover, a bridge built over wetlands will create a precedent that cannot be overcome when others wish to build within a wetlands resource. The Aquinnah bylaw will therefore be meaningless and ineffectual. The town of Aquinnah properly adopted these regulations many years ago to reflect the desire of town citizens to maintain setback standards that must cover all developers. Thank you for your consideration in this matter. We would appreciate it if you would make this letter part of the official record. And then we also have a letter from the Millers, which I made copies for everyone. So I will try to summarize it or point to the put their documents that people will probably want to see. So as they state, they are not able to be here tonight because Mark Miller had open heart surgery recently and cannot travel on the doctor's orders. And they asked to be consulted on the timing of future for hearings. They raised a couple of issues, most of which have to do with the rights within the easement. Number one, it's not clear that Mr. DeCoulis has the right to request the construction of a structure on our property. The previous owner of 39 Mushuk Trail, Peter Ox, granted an easement to Jeffrey Madison, which is recorded in the Duke's Registry of Deeds. It appears that Jeffrey Madison then assigned this easement to George Blackwell and Margaret Goobser, previous owners of the lot behind our property, which is recorded on such and such book and page. Mr. DeCoulis purchased this lot and received a confirmatory easement from Jeffrey Madison on August 24, 2005, which is recorded in the Dukes County Registry of Deeds. And a copy of that of these documents are attached to this letter. This confirmatory easement states that it is the same easement as the one assigned to George Blackwell and Margaret Goobser. We will be investigating whether Jeffrey Madison's assignment of his easement over our property was valid. Two, assuming he has a valid easement over our property, the question whether Mr. DeCoulis has the right to construct the proposed bridge. The easement allegedly granted by Jeffrey Madison to George Blackwell et al. Clearly states that the grantor hereby grants with quitclaim covenants a perpetual right in easement pertinent to Gayhead set off at 232 in Gayhead, Dukes County, Massachusetts, to pass for purposes of ingress and egress upon and across under a 10-foot wide way between Mushuk Trail and the said set-off lot, the easement area, to be used in common with all others now that are lawfully entitled to, therefore, for all purposes for which streets and ways may be used in the town of Gayhead. The key phrase in the sentence is a 10-foot way. So although the easement that Jeffrey got from Peter Ox is a 40-foot way that's shown there, he's saying that the easement given by Jeffrey to the prior owners and then to Jim DeCoulis is limited to 10 feet. Mr. DeCoulis's plan proposes a base structure, I assume that means the base of the bridge, that measures 20 feet in width, well beyond what is granted in the easement. Furthermore, it is not clear that constructing a structure on our lot falls under the scope of all purposes for which streets and ways now or hereafter may be used in the town of Gayhead. The fact that the easement permits the grantee the right to clear and keep clear the easement area of all trees, vegetation, building, and other structures shows that the intent of the easement was to permit nothing more than a 10-foot wide dirt road, not a bridge. Jim, what is the width of the bridge itself?
I don't know, I'd have to go back to the details.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I think there's several.
Well, I wanted to keep
right
reading the letter. I just wanted to keep
okay,
reading.
Okay.
I just, my point was, you know, 10 foot wide, not a bridge. Additionally, the easement assigned to Jeffrey Madison to George Blackwell is subject to the terms of reservation set forth in the deed from the grantor. Blah, 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 blah. This states that the traveled area of such 40 foot wide way shall not exceed the minimum width and shall not be improved except as expressly set forth hereunder. Otherwise, 40 foot wide way shall be maintained in a natural condition. A structure such as a proposed bridge is not expressly set forth in the deed in the Dukes County Registry book and page or cited. We will be investigating this further and whether Jeffrey Madison's alleged assignment of the easement over our property intended to include the right of constructing the structure in the easement area. And then lastly, while it is clear Mr. Toulis does not have the right to construct the proposed bridge, the most important reason why this plan should be rejected is a potential harm that this structure will be in the wetland area of our property. This wetland area is a vital component of the local ecosystem, should be protected. Additionally, due to the history of the area, we're concerned about the disruption of any burial sites that may be located on our property or the lot behind our property. A more careful study of the proposed construction zone should be conducted in order to fully understand the potential damage to wetland areas and potential archaeological sites. Okay. Does the board have any questions about what the lawyers are alleging? Okay. Jim and Peter?
Yeah, well, I guess the comments to both letters, Mr. Chairman, the Fruchtman's letter and the Miller's letter are wetland concerns, and it seems like they're saying that the bridge is not good for wetlands and it will negatively impact the wetlands or the flow. And but that's the exact opposite of the purpose of the bridge. The bridge is to stay out of the wetlands as best we can. So we understand the concern. We just don't think it's grounded in the reality of the purpose of the bridge. And again, the bridge to cross over the wetlands is approved now under both the State Act and the wetland bylaws. Going to Ms. the Miller's letter, and I guess just trying to take the paragraphs in the order. In paragraph one, it essentially he says, we will be investigating whether Jeffrey Madison's assignment of his easement over our property was valid. Okay. So, you know, what he's saying is it's not clear whether the trust has the right to over an easement there. Now, what the Millers didn't say, for whatever reason, is that in November 18, 2008, so roughly just about 3 years ago, there was filed in the land court an agreement for judgment, and I'll read from it, but I'll also give it this to the board. There was some litigation regarding various owners out here regarding who had what easements and so forth, and eventually the parties, including the Millers, signed this agreement for judgment. It was signed by, among others, Jane D. Miller and Mark J. Miller, both of whom had signed the letter that you submitted. And the agreement for judgment said, the following easements granted by Jeffrey Madison pursuant to certain rights reserved in deeds by Madison to Jack Fruchtman and Joanne Fruchtman and so forth, are valid and enforceable by the grantees. Okay, so the following easements are valid and enforceable. And then when you look at the three particular easements that are valid and enforceable, easement C is the easement dated July 28, 1994, from Jeffrey L. Madison to George H. Blackwell and Margaret B. Gutzer, the co-trustees of the Testamentary Trust of Alice Stone Blackwell, recorded with the registry in book 640, page 895. Okay, that's this easement in here from Madison to Blackwell and Gutzer is the same one the Millers refer to in here. And so in November of 08, the Millers signed this agreement for judgment. So they've already confirmed that the easement exists. So respectfully, it is clear that the trust has the benefit of that easement.
Right. And can you tell me again, just I missed the top of it, the judgment was what are the parties or what's the name of it?
The document that the Millers and other parties signed is called Agreement for Judgment. Okay. And it was in Land Court Case 298126.
Okay.
And I believe I have other copies of this, Mr. Chairman, so I'm happy to give it to you. The red underlining is mine just tonight.
All right.
Feel free to...
Can I just ask, what was the judgment? What does the easement say? Is it 40 foot? Is it the...
Well, that's part two. What he just said, correct me if I'm wrong in your summary, the first thing the Millers raised is a question of whether these Jeffrey's assignment of Peter's easement to other people, including Jim, was valid. And as part of a separate land court issue, those parties actually agreed that it was valid, is what they're claiming. So now that answers the first question. So now we should go to question two, which started assuming he has a valid easement, which they're now saying. Now we get to the question of the 10-foot restriction.
Okay, so it's not easy describing these things, meaning these easements.
It's not easy to understand.
But if you do look at the document in the back that says confirmatory easement.
The last page?
Yeah, at least in my staple version it is. This confirms, this is Jeffrey's easement to Gorda.
Okay.
And in the third paragraph, the reference that the Millers are referring to is to pass for purposes of ingress and egress under and across a 10-foot wide way. In fact, they're saying that although the larger easement is 40 feet, that Jeffrey has restricted it to a 10-foot wide way that may be cleared and that everything else is to remain natural. Yes.
So that was the last page of that package. Okay. Now if you go to two prior pages, the one that says at the top, grant of access easement and agreement to lot 232.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's to me, I consider that one of the original documents or one of the original instruments, the one from Madison. There in the first line, Jeffrey Madison granting it to the fourth line down, it says George Blackwell and Margaret Gubser. Okay. And in that, you go down to the second paragraph, it says the grantor grants, this is Madison granting, the perpetual right of easement, to pass for purposes of ingress and egress and so forth across a 10-foot wide way between the Moship Trail and the lot. So the Moship Trail is down here, and so what this easement did is gave a 10-foot wide road, if you will, to get up to here. Okay. Now this 10-foot wide road is within a larger 40-foot wide easement. What it is saying in that document there, it's for all purposes for which streets and ways may be used in the town of Gay Head. We think that includes the ability to build a road 10 foot wide, at least the travel part of it 10 foot wide. That's how roads are used. You have to construct them to get the benefit of the easement. So it's not a 40-foot wide road. It's not a 20-foot wide road. What it says here in several spots is, hopefully, proposed 10-foot wide driveway. That's what we're proposing. We're not proposing a 20-foot wide road. So
the abutments, I think you called them, to the bridge are clearly structures, in my opinion, and... are wider than 10 feet, aren't they?
Well, I don't know if the abutments are structures.
It's not part of the way. The abutments are not part of the way. The abutments are, and the retaining walls are designed to minimize impact on wetland resources. If you were to look at,
a piece of paper.
Yeah. I have a blank piece of paper.
Here.
Great. You know what? I'll take a minute. But I mean, if you were to look at what we're doing here, I mean, we have a 10-foot wide way, and we have a couple options. Okay, so here's the existing grade, for instance. Okay, here's the existing grade. Now, what do you want to do? Well, under engineering standards, we could fill it in without a retaining wall or without a retaining structure, but the fill would have to be at a slope of 3:1. Okay, so our impact on the wetland resources might be 30 feet wide. Well, what we're doing is we're minimizing the wetland impact. We're building stone retaining walls with concrete abutments inside of them. And what we're doing is we're significantly reducing the impact on wetland resources from this, say, 30-foot disturbance, to something that's 20 feet or even less. So that's what we're trying to achieve here,
okay.
Reduction of impact to wetland resources.
But you are saying it is 20 feet or something.
That's not the way. The way itself sits on top of this. And the way itself is 10 feet wide.
Right. But I think the question.
Sure.
Could you give a dimension, Jim, from the outer point of the so-called concrete structure that's gonna hold this tip from one side to the other? Do you have that dimension?
It's in the superseding order condition plans.
And do you have that with you?
I have it.
So that we're not just looking at the boards that the car is gonna run over, but so that we actually have an outer.
Right. Well, assuming of a ruler, you can measure it on the plan.
I have far greater details that are in the superseding order conditions. And if anyone's got email access right now, I can email them a PDF.
Because it does make a difference if it's 10, 20, or 30 feet. I mean, those things would make a difference for the planning board. We're not necessarily talking about the wetlands. I mean, I'm trying desperately to strip myself of talking about that. I could talk for hours about that. But because I so disagree with DEP, but we're talking about the actual structures that are going on this property, how they are impacted according to, you know, and how our bylaws fit into that. So I kind of want to know how much, what square footage are we talking about from concrete bunker to concrete bunker and all the way along?
Right.
And I have a quick question for builders. Would these bridges be part of the footprint then as a structure?
Well, that actually raises an interesting question. If I believe it's a structure by our definition, mm-hmm. both the bridge and the concrete and retaining walls areas,
mm-hmm.
But they're on a different lot. They're on the Miller's lot, not on Jim's lot.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a weird.
They have that included in other.
Right. So then would we have to include all of the Miller footprint that they have on their own lot already and add that to the, because our bylaw states 2,000 square feet of footprint, anything above that, you need a special permit, and that's the discretion of this committee.
That is a question that we should probably have to address.
Would that be towards
Well, it's
a
Miller's lot.
Right.
It's less than 2,000 feet. I think I put that number in the application.
What's less than 2,000?
Entire footprint impact.
No, I was talking about the Miller home. And then adding the footprint of the bridge.
That's not our proposal.
I understand it's not even proposal.
We have a bylaw.
It's our prerogative to look at that, to review that.
We have a bylaw that says that the total footprint of all structures on a lot shall not exceed 2,000 square feet without a special permit. And that's what they're referring to, is that in effect, since this is a structure, this footprint either limits the Miller's future ability to expand. It has an impact on them, and it would be an additional permit that we would need to grant.
And if that was so, if it's on the Miller's, my question would be,
should they not be the ones applying for the
permit?
In the past, we've been very careful about who's applying for what.
This gets back to the question of the easement, because the Millers, in theory, have given the right to other people to use that easement. So that's a done deal. And we have this all over town where people have roads going through their property to get somebody else's property. Right.
Mr. Richards, I'd like to suggest, though, that it was the Miller's predecessor, Peter Ross,
who
granted that right.
Right. But my point is it's still...
It goes with the property.
It's beyond their control to a certain extent. I guess the question, I just want to get the facts out here. Is the bridge itself wider than 10 feet, the 50-foot part?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry, I just shut down my laptop, but there's a detail on the superseding order conditions. It's all to scale, 1 = 3 feet,
yeah.
Showing exactly, you know, what the detail.
Your comment about the abutment being a structure, the definition of the zoning bylaw defines structure, and in that definition, at the end, it says a wall greater than 6 feet is a structure. This abutment is not greater than 6 feet. Do you know what Paul is talking
about? Yes, it's 5 feet at the most.
So it's not a structure as the way the bylaw defines structure, because it's not greater than 6 feet.
A fence or wall. However, the other part of the definition of the structure is it's a combination of materials at a fixed location to give support or shelter. Mm-hmm. And I think it all fits under that definition. It's designed to support roadway and vehicle or to get over a bridge. It's not a stone wall. It's not a fence. Granted, there's a stone wall component within it, but it's not, I wouldn't judge it as a structure based on that part. I would view it as a combination of materials to give support. It's cement, you know.
Hopefully we don't have to wrestle with that issue too much, but we disagree, because if the bylaw goes on to say that the fence or wall is greater than 6 feet, yes, it is a structure. The implication of that is if it's less than 6 feet, it's not a structure. And this is not greater than 6 feet.
Are we saying that a bridge is a fence or a wall?
Well, we were talking about the abutment, the two ends. And I thought the chairman said, well, because that abutment, he said the abutment is a structure. And the abutment is akin to a retaining wall, essentially. And it's not greater than 6 feet.
It's a support.
We have a precedent.
Right. How far does the wall go under the ground?
It's all in details.
How far does it go under the ground?
2 feet.
2 feet and 5 feet above, that's a 7 foot wall. So, and we've been through this many times.
Yes.
Retaining walls, we believe the building inspector looks at the whole height of the wall and determining whether it's a structure.
That's the mean average grade, so if you're not just the grade.
Yeah, but if you're looking at mean average grade, you're looking at existing grade, which is...
Well, I don't know if it changes up or down. I mean, you know.
All right.
You know,
just to clarify, I was thinking that... when we look at footprint, we're not only looking at walls and walls. When we look at a footprint, don't we usually look at terraces and patios and the sheds? So even a patio isn't 5 or 6 feet tall, but we define it as a structure. It came from when we looked at boardwalks going to the beach, and we decided that those boardwalks were structures.
So I don't think you can separate the abutments from the bridge either.
Right.
The abutments are one thing, and the bridge is...
So it's not a structure, it's what's on the ground. It could be on the ground. It could be a structure.
If it's just a question of building the boardwalk, that's 10 feet wide.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a question of building the abutments, those may be a fence or a wall, but together, there's something different.
Right. So
separate them.
We can come back, and this is something obviously we'll have to come up with an opinion on or an agreement on. But I think the other thing is, obviously, and I know, Carlos, you have a question, just hold on a sec. Normally, we don't treat issues as easements as anything. It's not our business to decide whether an easement is valid or anything else. You know, that's really between the Millers and you guys to handle in court if that's where it goes. But I would just say that given the magnitude of the impact of this potentially, that I'd be hesitant to grant a permit with that unresolved and have work done if it hadn't been resolved by the parties.
I remember, and you'll have to remind me who it was, but you did have a situation where somebody was applying and that person was not the person who had given the easement. It wasn't their property, so we did have to wait for that to happen. The individual, the owners of the property, had to be the ones applying for the permit. So we have. That's happened a couple of times.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's...
Actually, Carlos, you had your hand up.
Just stipulating that the bridge with abutment is a structure for now, for argument's sake.
Yep.
Are there not some setback issues that arise from property lines? And I'm just wondering, what are the setbacks from the property line here?
We've indicated that we believe we meet the 30-foot setback. That's the requirement. Now, again, you, like you said, let's just stipulate for discussion purposes, and, you know, just, okay, we don't agree with it, but I don't believe this bridge crossing, you know, the driveway is 30 feet, because the whole width is 40, so 30 probably comes, you know, so if this is the lot line, I think this feature, if you will, is within 30 feet of it.
So you're agreeing that it is within the setback?
No, I'm not agreeing it's in the setback. No, I'm not. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is that...
You said it was within 30 feet.
It looks like it's not agreeing with the structure.
Yeah.
No, that's right. Jim, as the engineer, can show you where 30 feet is, and then it comes about here.
Right.
So then
the bridge and that abutment are within the 30-foot setback to the property line.
The bridge and the abutment are within 30 feet of the lot line. Yeah.
Yes, that's what we're saying.
Yeah.
Okay, well, there's a bylaw that says that you cannot put a structure within the setback to a property line.
We understand that. And we disagree with the board's contention, if you will, that the bridge constitutes a structure. Yeah.
Okay. If we did persuade you, I mean, the point is, we can't, if we decide that it is a structure, we can't permit the bridge. You would need to get a variance from the ZBA or something like that.
Mm-hmm. That sounds right. I understand that, yeah.
But just, you know, it's a good point, Carlos. It's a structure and a setback. Okay, you were going to say something before?
I was going to say, and I know there's a lot of point counterpoint. I apologize for that if I'm sounding adversarial. But the notion that where we have an owner of lot 708, the Millers, and then we have the deed of easement to get the access that, and we can tell from this letter, they'll never, ever apply for us to do this. That, you know, the 10 years or 12 years it's taken us to get to tonight will seem like a small amount of time. So if we were doing something in combination, I could see. But where we have the ability, the legal ability to do this, I don't think it's necessary to get the Miller sign off. And what I typically see with boards, Mr. Chairman, is like you said, when there's a private disagreement over property rights, it's not the board's job to adjudicate that. Now, if we had something that had no colorable right, like if we couldn't even show this easement, if we just made this up, I could see the board saying, you know, we're not going to go forward on that basis. But what we show here is more than colorable. We've given the instruments and we have the signed agreement from the Miller. So I understand the Miller saying they're going to look into it a little bit more. I frankly, I don't think they need to look into it anymore, and I think we've shown our right to do this. So I do think that your comment is a correct one on it's not the board's job to you know, litigate us versus the Millers on this particular issue.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I'd like to suggest that the Millers' opportunity to look into this has long since expired. They had a due diligence opportunity at the time that they purchased the property from Peter Ox. I gave all the superseding order conditions information to the Millers. While they were negotiating with Ox to purchase the property, they were on notice that that was in effect at the time they bought the property. And so for them to be raising this at the 11th hour, that there's somehow a potential easement flaw here is just not, it's not fair. You know, and furthermore, I'd like to add that the easement conveyance from the Blackwells to Matt, well, from Ox to Madison, and then subsequently from Madison to the Blackwells, the Blackwells conveyed all their rights in that easement to us. And that easement that Peter Ox granted to Jeff Madison described that 40-foot-wide easement to be used to construct ways as they're commonly used in the town of Gay Head. I mean, that there's ways around this town that include huge culverts. You drive over a 72-inch culvert when you come into the town, at Heron Creek, when you cross over, you know, when you're coming into the town, you're driving over large drainage structures all the time in public ways in this town. So, you know, all of this was on notice at the time that they purchased.
But you hadn't applied, so.
What do you mean we hadn't applied? We had a permit in effect. We had a superseding order of conditions that was in effect at the time they bought the property.
Right, but you didn't have a permit from a planning board plan review committee to
That's correct.
Do anything. So why isn't this an appropriate time to raise it?
Well, it could have been raised in other proceedings. So I think that's Jim's point, that this is not the first time this has been proposed.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Sometimes when I've been so involved with this for so long that I just assume everyone in town knows what's going on. And then I realize, no, a lot of people don't know. They don't know the details, and the devil's in the details. And so, just if we can take away the issues around easement and return back to the issues that are really pertinent and very appropriate for planning board to review, structures, height, visibility, archaeology, just on the face of it, you know, we need to have some clarification legally about this particular lot. How much square footage is already, you know, footprint on that lot, how much will be added, and I agree with Jed, how much every dimension of this bridge and any concrete or retaining walls that go along with it have to be measured, and not just, I would like to see them not just email me with a cross-section, which I've seen since 2000. I want a real sort of architectural rendering of what this is going to be and how many square feet, and then start look. The easement is one issue.
Right.
That is, and then there's a whole series of issues with the other piece.
Right. Well,
I'm not even going
to
get
right. And
that.
The easement is not necessarily our issue. It's not our issue to decide.
Right.
However, it may be something that we want to condition on or something.
Right.
All right. So let's continue. Carlos raised an issue. Bertha, do you have any issues or questions that pertain to normal planning board stuff?
Well, if we can continue to talk about the easement and that road, it is a road.
The road you can talk about.
Can a fire truck, emergency vehicle go in and out of there? If there are turnips, for instance, all those safety issues that we, you know, the town looks at through the planning board.
I had a question about frontage, if there was that.
Okay, let's do Bert. So do you want to respond to Bert's question about fire and turnouts?
Yeah, I'd be glad to. This bridge is designed for what we call H20 loading. It'll hold a fire truck, full concrete truck. It's the reason why we've got the significant steel that we do on this thing. As far as turnouts go, they're not presented in here, but very easy to get a T-turnout in here. If that's what you want to see, you'd be glad to do it. We could do it right up in this area here, where the wetland replication area is. It's a great opportunity for a T right here, for a turnout. I don't think we've really got enough room here in this triangle, but I'd be glad to provide a T-turnout for a large emergency vehicle to turn around there. Ultimately, you know, the reason why Jeff Madison negotiated this easement is that this easement is ultimately going to go into the Walmsley Homes there. Madison holds a triangular portion here of a right to cross our lot and to get into the Walmsley Homestead. Jeff Madison holds a triangular portion of our land. He holds an easement right to go over this triangle, over our property, to get into the Walmsley Homestead. So, you know, ultimately the issues of ingress and fire emergency access and whatnot are probably going to be resolved when the Walmsley Homestead gets built on. But we, as one of the benefactors of this easement, would be glad to provide that turnout right in the middle portion of the lot.
Okay. Joanne,
you have
any question next?
I just wanted to ask a question about frontage. Where is the frontage?
Where's the road?
What?
I was wondering that one. You mentioned Moshe, and I don't see where there is any road frontage.
There's not road frontage on Moshe Trail, as you point out, because we don't
have
that.
Yeah. So is there road frontage at all?
The lot has existed and is a pre-existing non-conforming lot because it's from 1878, and it has the access, which is the import of frontage. Is through this.
You know, just like the Millers don't have access, we don't have access on a public way either. The reason is that the Millers lot was created in 1878 and set off lot 708. Our lot set off lot 232, was created in 1878. These are the original lots from the partition of the common lands. And the zoning bylaws have a provision that these pre-existing lots have the right to be built on as long as they have a minimum of 5,000 square feet.
Recent town meeting, you voted on requirements of road
frontage. We, at the last town meeting, we amended the townwide DCPC to include a frontage definition or a frontage requirement. So the town's position is that because this is not under 40A, but is now under the Act, the Commonwealth that just five that support the Martha's Vineyard Commission. And I believe, I'm no lawyer, but I understand this case law that would imply that there is no grandfathering for an MVC sanctioned bylaw.
We looked at that new provision, and I think it shows up, and we address it in the September 3rd letter on page 5. Section 13.4-10, minimum frontage, and we believe that this new requirement doesn't apply because the property qualifies as a pre-existing lot under the other section of the bylaw, 3.4-1, and it has more than 5,000 square feet of land.
Right,
and then the property pre-existed the adoption of this provision. So what you know, general rule of law is, just because the town, a town, amends its zoning bylaw doesn't mean that new provision can reach pre-existing protected land.
Right, except that's true under 40A, but this bylaw is not under 40A. And therefore, that standard Massachusetts provision does not apply, is my understanding.
Yeah, Richard, you're going beyond what we're just talking about here, Mr. Chairman, something that goes beyond Chapter 48. And this is a fundamental constitutional right. You know, when you buy a piece of property and laws get changed and the rules get changed and yardsticks get moved, it's not fair to the property owner particularly since we've been under 12 years of addressing concerns from one board after another, going to one court after another, and at the last hour here to be moving the yardsticks once more. It gets down to a constitutional issue.
It's not a constitutional issue. The powers of Mises Van Commission have been tested in court, and I believe that there are cases involving just this type of thing where there has been a change in the law and it's been upheld by the court. But what we can do, I think we should convince ourselves that that's indeed correct, and maybe get town council to write a letter or whatever to us so that we know.
Can we ask opinions concerning a few things possibly that have been brought up to me?
Sure.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, just sort of keeping track of the parking lot issues, if you will, maybe that's the appropriate terminology. One is this bridge issue.
The structure issue?
Whether the bridge is a structure.
Right.
Whether there's setback applicability and so forth.
Right. Yeah, what I've noted there is that we think it's a structure, you don't, and that there are two issues that need to be researched about that. One is the question of within the setback, mm-hmm. and then the second one is our bylaw about 2,000 square feet of structure on a lot, mm-hmm. and how that applies in this odd case where you have an easement. That is an odd situation.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, does that apply to footprint? Is it 2,000 square feet of structure or 2,000 square feet of
footprint? It's footprint.
Footprint, yeah.
Footprint.
So I think the point that Mr. Thielen mentioned was that looking at the Miller's footprint and seeing what that is and seeing what this is.
And I'm understanding that since you'll send us a copy of the order of conditions, that in there is sufficient information for us to determine what that is, the exact size of those things.
Yeah, I emailed it 10 minutes ago. Okay.
That's one of the things that we don't need to really revisit, though, the actual dimensions of the pieces in the ground, because sometimes it's very difficult to get a full square footage, especially if not every aspect of the on the ground is being measured in. So that's
why
I'd like to see more than just
that. Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that the details in the superseding order conditions in these plans are, you will not find details that have ever been seen on a driveway in a project in this town. They're highly detailed and they deal with the value of the
bridge.
How many pages is the document?
15, maybe. It's a couple of 11 by 17.
We'll distribute it to everybody, and everybody can look at it. All right, and then additionally, then this question of grandfathering on the frontage is clearly an issue. Any other questions that the board has on standard planning board issues?
Just my question I had was the archaeological. We went through tile and then
an intensive archaeological survey was ordered by, it was recommended by the state back in 2000, mm-hmm. and they have the study done, and they've now got, it's gone the full step. Powell sent the study to the state, mm-hmm. the state has now sent us another letter. There was a
feature
found, which we all saw today on the site visit, and the state is recommending that it be protected during construction, and we would probably just make the state's recommendations our order of conditions on that, is the way we would handle that. It's actually not on his property, it's on the other's property, so all he can really do, I think, is
because there's overlap in terms of issues that the planning board deals with alongside the CONCOM, I would just ask that we look very carefully, since we did not order. You know, we do not authorize an order of condition. It's coming from the DEP, and if it's the one I think it is, it's something from, as Jim said, a long time ago. But I'd like our committee to be especially aware of all of the loss of habitat, tree cutting, brush clearing. Of course, our position in the Clinic Concom is that replication is not ultimately a win-win, that it sometimes is a huge failure. And so in terms of replicating areas, there's more environment destroyed. I mean, in my opinion, the whole lot, so much of a lot, that is a total degradation of the environment. But if we could look at that number and really make sure that the trees, it's just not enough to say, well, we're going to clear as little as possible. I'd like to know, you know, flagging and what trees are going to have to be cleared for, for instance, the driveway that is meandering through. Not only is it, you know, trees and brush having to be cleared, but also we're going through potential dunes and berms and up and down and into valleys and cutting through stuff. And there are retaining walls within that piece that also have to be built in order to, as Jim claims, save the wetlands from destruction. We're going to retain a lot of the soil. Again, another thing we should look at in terms of footprint. So there are all of those issues that we cannot, as CONCOM, we cannot have any kind of input. We have to go with what DEP has done. And so I would just ask, where we do interface with you, could we just look at all of those issues in terms of the environment?
And usually we ask the number of trees, like freedoms, you know, we ask, like, how many trees are we talking about? Like, so we get a better sense. For me, it's really helpful to know if someone's going to take out 150 trees or 48 trees or 24 trees.
Well, the only thing is, having done the site visit, I mean, it's a lot of trees, but there are also a lot of trees. Mm-hmm. In fairness, there are a lot of trees out there. And if the cutting is as restricted as they're proposing, then it could be 100 trees, but it's a very densely wooded lot. And
Mr. Chairman, if I may just show where the tree line is.
Saying, also, it's the size of the trees.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's a difference if they're just the smart sliding ones are important. Mm-hmm. They're just the little ones or the major ones.
Right.
Well, we can visit that. Just so you know, on the site visit, Jim actually, although the road was sited as it is on the map, he was asking for a leeway of 5 feet or so to avoid insane old growth trees. So I think they'd be willing to do that.
Because the road is 10 feet wide. Now, Mr. Smith?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 10 feet is probably here. So there is some ability in the field to look, you know, move the road around a little bit if there's a, you know, sizable tree. And with the location of the wetlands out there that need to be protected, we don't have the ability to do a lot of pre-cutting, frankly. There is pre-cutting, just like any house and driveway on the island, there has to be some disturbance. It's unavoidable. We all live in homes and drive to the homes, but we do not have you know, free access to cut trees throughout because they're off limits due to the wetland location.
Right. But that is an area where we do have overlapping jurisdiction. Part of the reason I wanted to see what they were saying about trees.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, the base of this map was generated from Lockwood Mapping out of New York. They flew this whole town in 1979. And there's a tree line that's shown on the site plan here, which you can see right here. And this tree line here indicates just that all of this area up in here is heavy woodlands. And you'll notice how section that's outside of the area. I'd like to raise one other point, too, that Sarah brought up as to replication. As I stated, I've worked on two very successful replication projects in this town. Blackbrook Road, 4,500 square feet, in the landfill. At the base of the landfill, there's a stormwater detention basin. It's about 1,000 square foot detention basin. They're both functioning highly effectively. They've created wildlife habitat. They've been an enormous success. So I encourage you to go take a look at them and just see the quality of the replication effort.
All right, Carlos.
I wanted to ask you, is any part of the guard a lot on natural heritage maps?
No. Well, right now, the whole town, Carlos, as you probably know, is considered potential threatened habitat.
There is a map that's right about natural heritage, and I'm just asking you.
We have a sign-off from the Natural Heritage Program that I'd be glad to provide and bring, put into the record if you'd like.
A sign-off regarding
that the Gorda project, as proposed, is not threatening endangered or threatened habitat.
Is that first stream crossing a permanent bridge? As I recall, I didn't walk up there again today with you, but when you come up the easement and you circle around right there, is that a permanent bridge?
It's an 18-inch corrugated polyethylene pipe culvert.
So, culvert. And so, to cross that with the car, what's the, so the pipe, how are you building that? How's that being constructed over there?
Stream beds being protected with sand and stone. Culverts being laid at the stream bed elevation. Stone retaining walls will be constructed on both sides. And then it'll be filled in.
You're filling it in.
Yes.
This is one of the problems we have.
Like many other projects in town.
But you're filling, but you're, okay, so it's not necessarily going to be a bridge. You're filling it in once you
put
the culvert in place. Okay.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Like most wetland crossings are in this town. No one goes to the effort to build a bridge to cross a wetland. They generally just simply put a culvert in and fill in the wetland.
Anything else? NEPA is a good.
Actually, it's a natural heritage program.
Okay.
That letter is from the natural heritage program.
Okay.
Was concerned about that?
Yes.
All right. Other questions, Berta? Jen?
The only question is about stone walls. It said I didn't go to the site visit, so. There's no stone walls that are being crossed or removed or altered. So when you cross into the property line, there will be no stone wall there?
I'd be glad to talk about that. Stone walls from the Wamsley Homestead, there's one that comes down along Steve Yaffe's property, formerly set off lot 230. Lot 230, it ends at this point here with a drilled hole. The second stone wall, that's historic, runs down and meets this easterly point of the lot and ends right there. There's other stone walls further to the east and to the north, but there's no other historic stone walls that are in this area.
All right. Anything else? We normally ask for a set of elevations on a structure. I also for purposes of determining footprint. Does anybody? I think everyone would agree that this is not an open and highly visible area. So there's no issue on height.
How about and usually we see maybe it's shown on the parking lot is in elevations for the house itself. Some of those things just so we know.
So it's not going to be a parking lot per se. It's a three-bedroom house, so there'll probably be a driveway and a pull-up to it. But I wouldn't.
But usually, usually people have a car parking area and then a turnaround, and that's usually something that's
No sheds or anything. It's just no deck, or the decks are within the footprint. Part of this is just trying to get at what is the footprint of the structures on the lot.
It may be confusing to me because retaining walls are part of structures, so all the retaining walls on the property, whether they're for the road or
the driveway,
should be considered. Mm-hmm. And like you're saying, there's intention for steps are for decks or like Joanne was saying, terraces. All of those kind of are footprint for our structure.
Right. So, artificial drawings and usually.
Because is that 900 some square foot footprint that include like porches and things like that?
There's no porches being proposed.
No deck.
No deck.
Okay, so you're saying the footprint is the 20, what are these dimensions?
26 by 36. Mm-hmm.
There are some retaining walls for the driveway there. But That's right.
There's retaining walls at this culvert crossing, at this intermediate stream crossing, and then there's retaining walls at each end, at each abutment.
And there are retaining walls further in. You talked about
on for the berm. There's a berm section that needs to be cut back.
You're going right through a berm, and you said a retaining wall has to be built to hold back the water.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. In this area here, there's retaining walls as well.
You have to see a cross section of that.
Yeah. There's cross sections in the superseding order.
Right. What I would like to do is, even though you're sending us a copy of the superseding order, since you're the engineer, could you come up with a calculation for the footprint of the stuff in the easement? So, I mean, we'll look at it as well, but I'd like to know what you represent it to be.
Just so that I understand clearly, what exactly is the footprint definition? Is it just the stone? Is it the driveway?
It is the footprint of the structure. So, since maybe looking at the drawings will help. What I see here, to me, what looks like a structure or the area is including these stones, this whole whatever you put materials together to create an abutment.
But are you saying from one edge of the abutment all you cross over the driveway to the outer, from one outer edge of the retaining wall to the outer edge of the retaining wall?
Well, is there what's underneath it?
Just dirt.
Where's the cement go?
There's no, the concrete is not underneath the retaining. The details on the superseding orders.
But there's no concrete underneath this driveway, if that's what you're asking. The concrete just extends from this abutment here about 7 or 8 feet from the outer edge to along the driveway.
Okay.
So I could understand, you know, if you wanted to include the stone and the concrete, but not the driveway itself, which is just simply going to be gravel and sand.
And dirt? All right. But the bridge?
Retaining walls here.
Yeah.
Along there.
So that bridge abutments can take a fire truck absent any concrete. Underneath the stone or remove the stone?
Well, the concrete abutments have been designed with what we call spread footing. And the spread footing has been designed based on soil borings that were conducted at that site. Geotechnical investigation was done in this area here where the abutments are proposed. And based on that geotechnical investigation, the spread footings have been designed to handle the appropriate load.
It is concrete.
Oh, yeah.
I thought bridge abutments were stones only.
No, they're concrete. Reinforced concrete.
Well, who says?
There is a combination of concrete and stone. The stone will ride along the sides of the driveways leading up to the concrete abutments here. The concrete abutments will also be faced with fieldstone because we don't want you to see concrete from the outside. We'd rather have it.
We refer to the stone going down 2 feet. Grade.
Actually, the concrete foundation or the abutment will go 2 feet below grade.
So no lower than that.
No, that's what's shown on the screen.
So you're saying the stone is merely cosmetic?
Where the concrete abutment is. The field stone is cosmetic. It's a facade at the concrete abutments only.
Right, but it's everywhere else, it's retaining.
Everywhere else, it's providing us a retaining function to the dirt.
Mr. Chairman, just so I'm clear, this discussion of the footprint that you mentioned, just so we get you the information you're looking for, is it the, do you have the bylaw handy?
Mm-hmm.
Is it the section 13.47, the structural density, the one that says on any lot, the total footprint of all structures may not exceed 2,000 square feet except by special permit?
Yes.
Okay, that's the one. Okay.
That is the structural density one.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
And then, yes.
Okay. So we will provide those figures.
Yes.
And see where they fit relative to 2,000.
Yep.
And if it's greater than 2,000, well, that's for the special permit
right.
in that regard. And if it's less, I guess it makes things a little easier.
Right. Well, but the tricky part is, and what we have to do some research on, is how... Because in theory, it needs to include the Miller's house because it's that on that lot. And I don't know, I'll be honest, I don't know how to answer that question. We've never had this happen before. Usually, the structure being put on a lot is for the owner's benefit and something they want. So we have to figure out whether we think that applies or not, or why, or what the logic of it is.
Yeah, no, we've thrown a lot at you. You've thrown a lot at us, so I think we each have something to think about. I used to be on my zoning board for 7 or 8 years, and we always wrestled with these kind of things. I go in front of boards a lot now. We all jump into the nitty-gritty, okay? But sometimes it's good to step back. You're maybe applicable, forests and the trees and so forth. But what we have focused on, and I think it is a good starting point, is what is the purpose of this bylaw?
Yeah.
The purpose of this bylaw is to protect the watershed, the wetlands,
the habitat.
Which bylaw?
Your bylaw. This the purpose of the bylaw section 1.2 lays out the purposes of this, and while we focus a lot on this bridge, we're doing the bridge not because we want it. In fact, you can probably imagine it's more expensive to do, but we're doing it because it improves the protection of wetlands in that spot.
But you think it's because they got to go over the review process. They didn't have to kill because they weren't going to let you kill another
We could take other measures. The other points, there's wildlife habitat protection that's been protected here with the bridge. There's pollution prevention that's been protected with the bridge.
Yeah.
So there's a whole host of issues that we're addressing under this purpose of the zoning bylaws.
Carlos and
Bert, I was going to say, if there were no wetland issue at all, you still have an issue with structure and setback.
Right. I really would like to try to stay away from the wetland issue because it's really not our our issue here.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're going to say, Bert?
Yeah.
All right. Well, then, here's what I would recommend. Yes. I would recommend that we continue this for 2 weeks to October 18th, if that's agreeable to you. Right.
It's a little notified in this different paper.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. No. Somebody's just asking for this. October 18th at 8 o'clock, and just confirm everybody can be here then. All right. And then I would highly recommend.
We're going to confirm.
Okay. Sure. And then I'd recommend that we. Yes, there are. And then if we could exchange via written matter anything that can be documented on any of these points in advance so that we can do as much of this before the meeting and make the meeting go as quickly as possible. I will talk to our council and see if I can get a letter from them on the or an opinion for us as a board on the issues you've raised about the the frontage, and we will try to get back to you. The other reason, Jim, is that if you can put the figures to us, we can't really meet and go over it as a group and try to figure out what it means legally without having a public meeting. So it's easier for us if you can send the figures, then we can disseminate it and people can look at it.
So, Mr. Chairman, just to make sure what we did is okay with you and the members, can we email that to you and Ms. Hutchinson, and then you will send them out to everyone?
Yep.
Okay, not to get deliberation, just to spread the word. Okay.
Yeah, just to spread the word. And we did that last night, and nobody, we sent the letter out. I assumed, I didn't know until tonight whether everybody got that or not. We don't.
Okay, yeah, that's good.
Is that okay? Yeah, we can't. That's why I'd rather not have. I'd rather not have us try to figure it out, because I then have to ask somebody to do it or a couple of people to do it, and I don't want to do that. So,
I have another question about the specifics of the structure elevations. What exactly are you looking for? Because they're not in the zoning bylaws.
No, it's usually though when somebody's building a house, because of the issues of the siding guidelines, which you mentioned, the trim and everything else. Usually that's where we address those issues. In your case, as you pointed out, your house is not in a highly visible area. It's not likely to be seen by probably anybody. But our normal procedure is to request it so we can make sure that it doesn't have a wall of glass. We actually have a rule of thumb that's 50%, no more than 50% of a wall should be glass pane. And so it just gives us an opportunity to quickly look at it. We don't like skylights, by the way, for example. These are things that when we see an elevation, it's also so that when we can sign off on a thing and give it to the building inspector, he knows exactly what it is we've approved in terms of those issues. So
I think the concept of showing you what might be constructed is okay. In the 2 weeks' time, even after, I don't think we are going to present to you the plans that we're ready to take to the building inspector.
That's fine. In which case, we could approve them unconditional as long as you came back with the plans when you had them or something like that. But that's what we do to everybody. It's not.
We're not, by submitting those plans, locking into a design.
No. Okay. In fact, what we've done with some, with many cases, and maybe this is what you prefer to do, is you want a building envelope of X square feet on the ground and 23 feet high, and then we'd approve that building envelope as long as you came back with, you know, the specific plans when you were ready to do them.
And I'll just have to ask for a landscape plan.
Yeah. Any other questions?
No, thank you.
How's the 18th of you guys?
I think it's okay. I don't have my calendar with me, which is a surprise, but I think I will be here at 8, and if for some reason it doesn't work out, we will certainly let you know.
All right. So when you know for sure, can you send me a letter confirming continuance?
Okay.
And
I'd like to question the 8 o'clock time, though. Is there any chance that we can meet a little earlier?
We've got... Three other hearings already scheduled that night, and I have four hearings next week too. We're pretty busy. So.
Due to the fact that we're off island, we're coming from off island. Is there any chance of putting us up on first?
The others are advertised at this point. If we continue again, I will do that for sure. Part of the reason is that I scheduled at 8 is. This was a hearing I expected would take more than normal 20 or 30 minutes, and I didn't feel it was fair to try to guess how long it would go and then have everybody else sitting around afterwards. So,
does it make sense then to move it to, you know, the week after?
A later date?
A later date?
If you would like. Does everybody know their November calendars?
There are two things. I'm traveling a bunch in November, so...
I'm sorry, ask my question again.
They're asking if instead of doing it at 8 o'clock on the 18th, we could go to our next meeting date and go at 7, or let's pick a date and do just them at 7 and then not have to worry about pushing anybody back.
Selection day.
Can't do it on election day.
Election day.
Do you want to try Wednesday the 9th?
I'm not here,
he's still before. Oh, let's see. Who else? Carlos, you're here in the night?
I'm here.
Sarah's Joanne.
Are you here, Sam?
I'm here.
As far as I know, I am.
When is the earliest that you could do it on a Wednesday, everybody?
Six.
Six? Is that a six?
Six?
Six
in the evening?
Yeah. All right, so since we're on a site visit, and we'll make you the only one at this point, or we'll keep it small, we can do six. Does that help you?
What date again?
The 9th of November.
Okay, everyone can make it.
Bert is not sure, but we'll still have enough. We need five to be able to vote supermajority.
Five out of seven.
Seven, yeah.
I think my preference would be to have everybody here.
Well, yeah, at the same time, the law requires that we have a hearing and make a decision a certain number of days. And we can still, you don't have to have 7 days.
You're okay. Carlos, are you okay with that? So if we're not going to be sure for a little bit.
Okay.
I'm here the 18th. We have 3 days in October booked, and
we'll just get back
those days I agreed to. So.
Okay, so back to 18th?
Yeah, they're talking at the other dates, but maybe that's the best to work with.
Okay, so you'll still confirm that the 18th is good for you.
Yep.
You'll send me a letter confirming your agreement to continue.
We start at 7 on the 18th.
We start at 7, but we have Pam Neely.
And then this
one's
the 8th.
So we could do it at 6.
Start at 6 on the 18th?
I'm asking.
You go for an hour?
I don't know what
the last site is at 5:20. You have two orange sites because the others are continuations.
It's getting dark. I do 6 and agree to go just for an hour?
Yeah, if we're not done in an hour, we'll have to
continue. You trying to get a boat off, is that it?
Yeah.
So, 6 and try to, let's start very promptly at 6. Let's exchange as much in advance as we can.
Go 6 to 7, and then we'll have to start.
Yeah, we can go a little bit, but I don't want to go. Okay, so you'll still confirm 6 o'clock on the
18th of October.
Yeah.
Hey, Amanda, will you send an email out as soon as they confirm that it's 6 o'clock on the 18th? And we can all change our calendars.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So now you're saying it's 8? You're keeping it 8 until it's.
No, the 18th at 6 o'clock once they confirm.
But if it's not at 6, it's not at 8.
Then it's at 7. Then you need it at 7, right?
We need it 7, and we'll either
meet.
That's all you need to know, right?
If it's not 6 o'clock, we will ask for 8 o'clock.
Okay.
Because I have an appointment that I hope to be done, expect to be done, so I can be here at 6, and if not, we would take the 8 o'clock slot. But we will send a letter to confirm.
Any other questions? Gentlemen, any other questions?
No, thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Hearing is closed.
We're done for the night.
Yeah.
I have to go through the last episode of Prohibition.